Hello, and thanks for tuning in to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. Today's message is presented by Ken Holsberry, the preaching minister at the 10th and Broad Church. Let's tune in now for Ken's message.
Well, poor Chippy never saw it coming. He was just sitting on his perch, singing his little song, like all chippies do, minding his own business. And then the next thing he knew, he was sucked up, washed out, and blown away. The problem started when his owner opened the cage to clean it, but she decided she was going to clean it with a vacuum cleaner. Just as she stuck the nozzle into the cage, her cell phone went off, and she reached to get her cell phone, and Chippy was gone. So she panicked, and she threw the phone down, and she turned the vacuum cleaner off, and she opened the canister, and she took out little Chippy, who was covered in dirt and dust. And like any good owner, she wanted to take care of him, and so she rushed to the bathroom, and she turned on the faucet, and she stuck Chippy under. And then she looked down, and Chippy was shivering and shaking, and his feathers were sticking out everywhere. And as any good owner would do, she wanted to make it better. So she reached in the drawer, and she grabbed her blow dryer, and she turned it on. Chippy never knew what hit him. Somehow, I really don't know how, somehow the news found out about this story. And there was articles in newspapers about this. And so a few days later, one of the men who wrote one of those articles called the owner to see how was Chippy doing. Did Chippy make it? And the owner said, you know, he's still sitting on his perch, but he's not singing his songs. But he's still alive. I think Chippy is an example of someone who is down, but they're not out.
Yes.
And folks, we are looking at the letters that Jesus wrote to his churches in Revelation. And we're looking to discover what is it that Jesus is looking for in a church. And today, we're going to see that Jesus is looking for a church that may be down, but they're not out. Well, the churches written to in Revelation lived in a world that persecuted Christians. And so making a decision in Smyrna to follow Jesus Christ, making a decision to share life with a church, making a decision to be baptized, meant that you were putting your life and your family and your welfare at risk. And that is still true in places around the world today. There are places in the world this morning, whatever time zone they are in, there are places in the world this day that are secretly meeting because it's dangerous together with the church. There are places where they meet in fear, literal fear this morning. And we're going to talk about fear a little bit more, so I want to be careful how I use that word. But they're conscious this morning that as they meet, something could happen. That's not true for us. And we give thanks to God for that. But that's not true for us. And so churches around the world and churches in Smyrna had a decision to make as they dealt with the pushback of the world. And they had to decide, are they going to accommodate or are they going to be persecuted? Accommodation or persecution? And Jesus says that the church in Smyrna chose best. Let's hear the word of the Lord from Revelation chapter 2, verses 8 through 11. To the angel of the church in Smyrna write, these are the words of him who is the first and the last, who died and came to life again. I know your afflictions and your poverty, yet you are rich. I know about the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not be afraid of what you are about to suffer. I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on it, but 10 days is a period of time. For some period of time, you are going to suffer, Jesus says. Be faithful, even to the point of death, and I will give you a victor's crown. Whoever has ears, let them hear what the Spirit says to the churches. The one who is victorious will not be hurt at all by the second death. You can go and you can see the ruins of ancient Smyrna. Currently, there is a city in Turkey called Izmir on those ruins. So Smyrna is an ancient city, but even 300 years before this letter was written to the church in Smyrna, Smyrna had been the first city in the world to build a temple to the goddess Roma, the god of Rome. Before Rome ever became the world power that she is when this letter was written, the people in Smyrna had already tested the wind and had seen which way it was blowing, and they built a temple to Rome. And they put their lot in with Rome and worshiped Rome. And so, in the days that this letter is written, when an edict came forth from Rome that said the emperor is God and all people in the empire will go to a temple and make a sacrifice and say, confess, Caesar is Lord. When that edict came down, there was no problem in Smyrna. They'd been doing that for 300 years. The citizens lined up. But there was a small group of people in Smyrna who could not line up. There was a small group of people in Smyrna who had already confessed that Jesus is Lord and could not and would not claim any other in his place. And they paid the price for that. They were poor because of that. They had poor reputations and they had poor resources. Yet Jesus says, you are rich. Why would they be rich in the middle of their poverty? It's because Jesus is Lord. They had Jesus. And so Jesus says to them, I know, and I'll remind you that we've talked about several times, when Jesus says, I know, in these letters, he says, I know, because we've already seen that Jesus is among his churches. Jesus is in the house. He knows. And so he says to these Christians who will not bow to any other Lord, I know your afflictions. I know your poverty. I know your suffering. It's interesting that this persecution is coming from the Jews specifically. Because in the early days of the church, Christianity, especially to the Romans and to other people, was just seen as a connection, an offshoot of Judaism. Judaism was protected as an ancient religion in the empire. And so they did not have to do some things that others did. But they did not want to be associated with these Christians. And so it is, we see in Acts and we see here that very often it was in the synagogue that the persecution started. And Jesus says that they are a synagogue of Satan. I don't think Jesus is saying that in that synagogue they are worshiping Satan. I think Jesus is saying that in that synagogue they are letting Satan use them to persecute his church. And the enemy hasn't changed a lot because the enemy still uses religion to persecute the people of God. It appears from some things we know in history that the persecution in Smyrna started as economic persecution. And I think we would do well to pay attention, folks, to what persecution looks like. I'm not a prophet. I'm not the son of a prophet. But I can put my finger up and test the wind too. So I think we ought to pay attention. But the persecution here started as economic persecution. And from history we know that Christians were the victim of organized boycotts. Christians were the victim of job discrimination. Christians were the victim even of sanctioned looting. And so they were feeling the pressure of following Jesus. And they had decisions to make. Their afflictions were legitimately hard. Their burdens were legitimately heavy. And the word for their poverty is a word that indicates a poverty where you don't even have enough for your basic needs. And I want you to know, folks, this isn't fantasy or fairy tale or history that has nothing to do with us. These were real men and women who Jesus had saved, and they were suffering because they followed him. And so they hear that a word has come, that John has written a letter. John's someone they know. They hear John has written a letter, and that this letter has words in it that Jesus gave John. And so don't you imagine that the church can't wait to get together. They want to hear their suffering, their burden. They want to hear what the Lord has to say to them. And it's not what they expect. Because what Jesus says to them is, get ready, church. I know what you're going through, and it's about to get worse. I know what you're suffering, and some more is coming. The church is already going through a tough season. Some of you are literally going to die. And that is surely not what they expected to hear, but it is the word of the Lord nonetheless. And so I want you to imagine that you are a dad in that church. And you had a good job, and you did good work, but you wouldn't bow. And the union put some pressure on your boss and said, we need folks to work who will get along and go along. And you lost your job. And you're sitting in church next to your wife and your baby, and you're worried about how you're going to provide for them. Because Jesus is Lord and not Caesar. Or imagine that you are a widow and you're sitting in that church. And you live with your son and your daughter-in-law, and they take good care of you, and they love you, and they have so far been patient with you as you have begun to follow these teachings of Jesus. But the synagogue ruler is beginning to put pressure on your son, and he's telling him, you need to rein your mama in. But she says, Jesus is Lord. They're suffering. And Jesus says, you're going to suffer more. The name Smyrna means myrrh. Myrrh was an ancient ointment and fragrance. We read about it in Scripture. If any of you are in the cult of essential oils, just kidding. Just kidding. Essential oils, they have myrrh. I mean, it was real and it's still real. Myrrh was gathered. One of the places in the world where they made myrrh was in Smyrna. And myrrh is made when you take the leaves of this certain tree and you crush them and you press them, and this resin comes out, and this resin is sweet smelling. And it's an ointment. It has healing medicinal properties to it. And it's as if Jesus is saying to the church in Smyrna, you're going to be pressed. You're going to be crushed. But in the crushing, in the pressing, you are going to be a sweet fragrance to me. And there is this spiritual truth, there is this spiritual reality, folks, that it is in the crushing and it is in the pressing that we truly offer ourselves as a living sacrifice. And it is in the crushing and it is in the pressing that we find some spiritual healing. And it is in the crushing and it is in the pressing that we become a sweet and fragrant offering going up to the one who we confess to be Lord. Because it is when we are at our lowest that God can raise us to His highest. And it is when we are at our worst that God can extract from us His best. And it is when we are at our poorest that God can make us rich. And so that's what He told the church in Smyrna. I know your poverty, but you're rich. There's a lady in Virginia, and you've heard these kind of stories, but this particular one, there's a lady in Virginia, she went to a garage sale, she found a box, and it just had all kinds of things in it. And it had a little Paul Bunyan doll, and it had some bracelets and trinkets, and it had a frame with a picture in it. And the reason she bought the box is because she liked the frame, and she put it in her trunk, and she forgot about it. And several months later, her daughter was going through her trunk and discovered this box. It would be kind of like Paige going through Ted's trunk, if you've ever seen Ted's trunk. And so she found this box, her daughter did, and she saw this picture and she pulled it out. And her mom said, oh yeah, I forgot about that. I wanted that frame. Take that picture out. They took the picture out, and on the back of it, it was signed Renoir. And they took it and had it appraised, and it was worth $100,000. And she had paid $2 for a box. She was poor, but she was rich. Folks, that's how the world looks at us. That's how the world looks at the church. They see poverty. Here's what I mean by that. They say the church looks old. They say the church looks out of date. They say the church is irrelevant. They say the church is in decline. But that's not how Jesus sees His church. Jesus sees beauty. And Jesus sees vibrancy. And Jesus sees pricelessness. And Jesus sees purpose. And when Jesus looks at the church, He sees His body. And He sees the plan and the way that He is going to present the gospel to the world. That's how Jesus sees His church. And that's why in the darkest days of the church, her attackers and her persecutors have never, ever been able to squeeze the life out of us. Hebrews chapter 10 says to the church, you even had the joy when all that you owned was taken from you because you knew that you had something that was better and lasting. And His name is Jesus. Whether it is the church in Hebrews or the church in Smyrna or the church at 10th and Broad, we have something valuable, something better than everything else, something that will last. And so our focus isn't ever on what can be taken out of our hands. Our focus is on the one in whose hands we can never be taken out of, Jesus. And we may lose a lot of things. Folks, as a church, we may lose some of our traditions. We may lose some of our identity. We may lose some of our reputation. We may lose some political support. We may lose some economic support. We may even one day lose our lives, but we will not have lost because we are in Jesus. And He is Lord. And so we may be down, but we will not be out. Because He is the first and the last. He is the one who was and is and always will be. He is the one who died and He came to life again. And because that is true, His people, His church have nothing to fear. And as we live in the world, we've got to get this. There is nothing for us to fear, church. There is no one for us to fear. Because Jesus died and He came back to life. He is the first and He is the last. Jesus taught us, His disciples, in Matthew chapter 10, don't fear the one who can touch your body but can't touch your soul. Instead, you fear God who can destroy your body and your soul. He's the one that we fear. We don't fear anyone who could harm us or touch us. Physically, we would only need to fear the one who can do so spiritually. And that's why this teaching that is so core to Christianity must be proclaimed. And that is, there are two deaths. That's what the Bible teaches us. There are two deaths. Revelation is going to talk about that. And everyone who has ever been born will die the first death. We will experience the death of our physical body. But here's the truth of the gospel. Here's why it's such good news. All of us who are in Jesus will never, ever have to experience the second death, which is the death of our soul, the death of our spirit. There is an eternal death coming for those who are not in Jesus Christ. That's why His church has got to get the message out. That's why we can't be afraid. We got to be bold, because there are people in the world who are going to die two deaths. But those who are in Jesus will not. And so we have nothing to fear from death if we are alive in Jesus Christ. Because even though our physical bodies will die and they will decay, our soul will not. And again, we will be down, but we will not be out. Because we have a Lord who died and came to life. And as sure as His body was resurrected, our bodies will be resurrected. And we will live with Him forever. And so we have nothing to fear. There was a man in this church named Polycarp. He was a young man when the Apostle John was an old man. And he sat at his feet and he learned about Jesus. And I imagine he heard this letter read as a young man, because he grew up to become an elder in the church in Smyrna. And 70 years after this persecution in Revelation 2, there was another persecution under another emperor. And that time, Polycarp, as an old man, was arrested and sentenced to death because he would only say that Jesus was Lord. And he was bound. He could have gotten out of it if he had just said, "Caesar is Lord." That's all he had to say. But he was taken to a stake, and he was bound to the stake, and the wood was piled at his feet, and the oil was poured on the wood, and they gave him one more chance. And history records that Polycarp said, 86 years I have served him, and he has done me no wrong. How could I now blaspheme my King and my Lord? You threaten me with a fire." See, Polycarp knows about the two deaths. He says, "You threaten me with a fire that burns for a season, and after a little while it will be quenched. But you are ignorant of the fire of everlasting punishment that is prepared for the wicked." And with those words, Polycarp's body went up in flames, but his soul went to be with Jesus. John wrote in another of his letters, "Everyone born of God overcomes the world. This is the victory that has overcome the world, even our faith. Who is it that overcomes the world? He who believes that Jesus is the Son of God." And from that verse, there's an old hymn that proclaims, "Faith is the victory. Encamped along the hills of light, Christian soldiers rise and press the battle while the night veils the glowing skies. Against the foe in veils below, let all our strength be hurled. And press the battle while the night will veil the glowing skies. Against the foe in veils below, let all our strength be hurled. Faith is the victory we know that overcomes the world." Would you sing it? Faith is the victory. Faith is the victory. Oh, glorious victory that overcomes the world. The verse goes on to say, "To him who overcomes the foe, white garments will be given. Before the angels, we will know our name confessed in heaven. Now onward from the hills of light, our hearts with love aflame will vanquish all the host of night in Jesus' conquering name. Because faith is the victory. Faith is the victory. Oh, glorious victory that overcomes the world. Faith. Simple, heartfelt faith. That's our message. That we believe that Jesus is Lord. He's the Son of God, and we have put our faith in Him, and we will have a victor's crown. The world will press against us and push against us and take away from us and harm us and slander us and persecute us, and yet we will overcome. And so I struggle with what this passage says to 10th and Broad in Wichita Falls in 2018. Because we're not in the midst of this kind of persecution. I do think there are some signs and hints that that may be coming. It'll probably be good for us. There's pressure on us to accommodate to some politically correct stuff. But we're not experiencing the kind of persecution that others in the world are experiencing. And I honestly don't know what to do with that. There's going to come a day. There are people, as I said earlier, who are right now suffering in prisons because they confess Jesus. There are people who've lost their jobs. There are people who are worshiping in secret because they confess Jesus. And one day, we're going to stand before the Lord side by side with these folks. And all we're going to have to do is complain because it was too cold in the room and we sang too many new songs. I don't know what to do with that. But for this church, I think of the idea of being pressed. Because this church hasn't suffered or been persecuted, but there have been some hard days. And however they come, and for whatever reason they come, hard days have a way of revealing something about us. Because hard times, the testing of faith, the trial, they squeeze us and they press us, and the enemy wants to just squeeze the life out of us. But what ends up happening is that hard times reveal the character of who we really are. Hard times reveal the character of a church, and they reveal how much a church loves Jesus, and honestly, they reveal how much the church really and truly, hour by hour, day by day, decision by decision, believe that Jesus is still alive. And so when we go through difficult days, when we get squeezed, when we do so with faith, when we do so with our eyes fixed on Jesus, when we go through hard days and get pressed a little bit, we can do so without fear, because what ends up getting squeezed out of us is a fragrant offering to our Lord. And we find out that we may be down, but we're not out. And in fact, that's what I sense in this church. That you're not out. I sense a willingness. I sense a readiness to go to work, to press ahead, to seize the day, to live boldly for Jesus, to do whatever we need to do, to make whatever sacrifices we need to make, to press forward with a mission of God to bring into the world the kingdom of God. Because faith is our victory, and we have not lost our faith. I sense in this church a realization that God is at work, and He is building His kingdom. And he is saving men and women, and he is adding them to his church. He is rescuing them from the kingdom of darkness. He is bringing them into the kingdom of light. And I sense that you want to be a part of that. And I sense that this church has no fear about tomorrow, because in Jesus there is always a tomorrow. And so 10th and Broad may be a little bit chippy. And we may have been sucked up and washed out and blown away. We may even be a little bit down. But in Jesus, we are not out. And that's the kind of church that Jesus is looking for. Jesus.